And so if you give a kid a sheet with just math problems, they don't connect to anything else in their lives because they haven't had the experiences when they were kids of making something, of having it fail, of having to do multiple iterations from it. They aren't developing this idea of what do I do when I'm frustrated? How do I ask for help? Good teachers have always done making and experiential ed in their classrooms.
Welcome to the Rethinking Learning podcast series. I'm Barbara Bray, where I have conversations with awesome educators, leaders, and change agents all about the purpose and passion for learning. Welcome, everyone, to Rethinking Learning podcast series. This is Barbara Bray. Today, we have a wonderful talk about maker education with Jackie Gerstein. Let me just tell you a little bit about Jackie real quick. It's Dr. Jackie Gerstein. She's been teaching in-person and online for several decades. And, you know, currently, she's teaching a master's level online course in educational technology for Boise State, Walden, and Western Governors University. And the coolest thing ever is that she's also working with gifted elementary education, where she's working with kids at several schools, where she focuses on STEM and STEAM and maker education. Welcome, Jackie.
I had to do the crowds go wild. Sorry.
You know, I am so happy you're here. We've been doing a lot together. We just did a session at ISTE, and we just got off a webinar together. And, you know, I am curious why you are so excited about maker education. Can you just tell us a little bit about the background and how you decided to focus on this?
Sure. I was one of those painfully bored kids in my K through my undergrad education, and I just didn't think it was fair that I loved to learn and I hated school with a passion. And like I said, it was painful. And then in my senior year in college, I took a course in environmental ed. And for part of that course, we went out to the local, there was a camp and they did environmental ed sessions with kids. So I worked with fifth and sixth graders for a week and to study about marine life, critter life. We went and did a walk down the creek, literally down the middle of the creek to learn about history, went to a local cemetery and did gravestone rubbings and look at the lineage of people through the, and I went, wow, this is so cool. Why? It makes sense. It's real. I'm learning content. Why wasn't my education like this rather than this once, twice, three times removed, learning science in a textbook, learning math through worksheets, learning to read through chapters rather textbooks rather than really cool textbooks. So I think maker education is just an offshoot of this experiential education that I've been into since I was 19. I said at that time, if I had one wish, it would be to change the education system because I think it turns too many kids off to learning. So maker ed is just a form of experiential education, and I'm just thrilled it's becoming very popular in schools and libraries right now.
You know, what's really cool is that I can really relate to you because I had a real tough time in school until after school in college when I was doing the same thing with hands-on. And so when I started seeing what you're doing with maker ed, it was so nice that we kind of put our heads together about some, you know, ideas on how to make it work for all classrooms, all kids.
And it can.
And all teach.
And all teachers. It can and it should. So it's only people's teachers' resistance that's stopping it right now, I think.
Well, is that why you came up with that framework for maker education? And, you know, I really like the way you put it together. Can you kind of explain it?
Sure. There was, coming from the experiential ed field, it's this idea of if we just have an experience, then we leave learning up to chance. So it's based on the experiential learning cycle, where you do a front load, you are framing the experience, you do the experience, and then you reflect, and then it actually leads to more framing experience. So it's a cycle. So I didn't invent anything new. I just tweaked it to be more modern day, more applicable to Maker Ed, STEM, and STEAM, as well as to include more technology.
You know, one of the things is, as you know, I've referred to your website so many times. It's user, can you just mention what your website is?
It's called User-Generated Education.
And I love that. I just love the way it's all about the learners. It's all about the users. And all of us are learners. So what you did is you're pulling in not only ideas, you're now doing sketch notes with really great designs around the concepts. So it makes it really relevant and easy to comprehend for teachers and learners of all ages. So
we talked about this idea, and you do it too, mm-hmm. that I think a responsibility of educator in this era is to share out work. And people say, well, then I'm not getting paid. We get things. When you do share out, you get rewards of people coming up to you and thanking you. I've gotten jobs because I share my work. So I think it's a win-lose kind of model that I don't think we should be living in, because when we share our work that way, same thing with kids, going back to that reflective piece. And you know, one of my beliefs is kids should be sharing their work out to a broader audience. Mm-hmm. It motivates us. When I have someone come up to me at a conference and say, I read your blog and it's helped me, there's no bigger reward than that. So I know that's a little off from what we're talking about, but I think it does fit into that cycle of reflection and then sharing out your reflection so everybody can learn from it, including teachers.
Yeah, I've been doing that for many years, but it's like you pull in together. I just love the way you bring all the concepts together in your blog, but you also bring in research, you bring in details, you bring in tips, you bring in questions, and I'm learning from you all the time. So it's an honor.
Well, thanks, but it's really, it's a mutual respect. A society here. So.
Oh, you're so cute. So, you know, how do you connect making with what kids are supposed to be learning? You know, how you...
Yeah.
We talked about this in our webinar, but it's like, how do you make it so they're learning what they're supposed to be learning, but then it's also making it so it's relevant and real, you know?
Yeah. Well, I say, and I know you know Alice Keeler. She bought a domain name called... Worksheet Suck or something like that. I don't know if you know she bought the domain name.
Yeah, I do. I love Alice.
And it's She's true. Great. It's like when you give someone a worksheet, they're learning one skill that's on the worksheet that's often not even related to anything else. We've talked about learning in context too. Both of us are real, real big on that. And so if you give a kid a sheet with just math problems, they don't connect to anything else in their lives. So they're learning. So you're spending that 20 minutes, hour on something that kids may forget and often do because it doesn't have a context till a week later. But when we do maker activities and STEM and STEAM activities, it's so easy to go through them and say, I'm addressing these Common Core English Language Arts standards. I'm addressing these math standards. So that one activity is doing this cross-curricular, addressing cross-curricular standards, and the kids are excited, so it's a deeper learning, and they're learning skills not only related to the standards that teachers are asked to address, but they're learning things like, and you saw it in the webinar we just came from, the kids were learning how to talk to each other, how to present orally, how to work together in a team, how to be innovative, how to use their creativity, and addressing the standards. So we have this huge list of things they're learning from an hour activity versus maybe one or two things they learned from that hour-long worksheet they did.
So I see this that you're doing, and one of the other things I notice is that you're addressing social-emotional learning and competencies that aren't even addressed in those standards. Right. It's like, so talk about the social-emotional learning part, that where Maker Education comes in.
Sure. What's great about Maker Ed, and that's why I'm not a big fan of these they call them Maker Ed activities, but they're these step-by-step things. That they all, and they all end up with the same product. I call it the turkey, the Thanksgiving turkey, where they're all given a hand. You know, they trace out the brown paper on the hand, and then they all make feathers, and they hanging it up on the walls, and they all look exactly the same except for their name on the back. And you saw even things like gamey bots or little other kind of projects. They can still put themselves in it. And so, but by the nature of them being more open-ended rather than these closed-ended projects where the products are all the same, they are going to have to develop their social-emotional. My kids, and I just finished a blog post, you saw it yesterday, on what to do when a kid yells out, "I can't do this." And I work with work with gifted elementary students. I do summer camps for elementary. And almost every time, because of the open-ended nature of the projects, "I can't do this." And it's because it doesn't work the first time exactly that they want. The same with worksheets. Either they get the worksheets right or they don't, and the teacher moves on. So they don't have to spend time mastering it. So they kind of just move on. Everybody moves on. And when you're asking kids, even kids, I know adults get frustrated when they do, because they haven't had the experiences when they were kids of making something, of having it fail, of having to do it multiple iterations from it. They aren't developing this idea of, what do I do when I'm frustrated? How do I ask for help? Another thing I wrote about is I tell the kids, "Johnny knows some tricks. Why don't you go ask Johnny how he did it?" And they look at me like I'm from Mars. I'm like, you could go ask him. I have to say that all the time. Go ask for help. And they just, I think it's part of how they're socialized. But that's part of social. In real life, there's no teacher there for them to ask for help. So they have to figure out those ways of doing it. So there's just a natural, what are you going to do on your next task that helped you with your previous task so that you're more successful? So there's so much social-emotional, and it's not, and I love social-emotional curriculum, but it feels like, to me, like character counts. We'll do it today for half an hour, and it doesn't have a context, just like those worksheets. But when they're doing Maker activities, they have to build those activities in order to be successful.
So I'm just going to take that where we went off the UDL. We brought that in
Universal
and talked about empathy.
Universal
And we talked about the importance of, with design thinking, of getting to know the kids, getting to understand and use empathy. So there, one of the things you did with the squishy circuits is you had them create a squishy circuit prototype for a partner. So they had to figure out, they had to really get to know their partner to figure out what would be the best thing. So what I like is that how teachers could probably do this in their classroom if they looked at strategies instead of teaching a worksheet, how they could replace it with an activity like this, but also bring in that social-emotional learning part with the empathy and pairing kids up. So they're not just doing a worksheet that sucks
and
over again.
Right.
So I love it. I love that.
Funny thing that gets them to interview each other for perspective, I think, could be powerful. You could do that around a lot of different things.
I did that in history in sixth grade. We actually had the kids had to imagine themselves being part of history and then take it back, and they made a video and they helped each other design it. I also did claymation. I don't know if you were aware of that, but I did claymation long ago. And so all of these things is like coming back again, but now it's called the Maker Ed and Making. But it's like it can be integrated in the whole school day and with any class. It's just how to do it. We just have to give them some strategies, you know?
What we used to say about experiential ed and maker ed, I think is true. If you don't get seduced, we talked about that earlier, about the 3D printers and the laser cutters, because human beings like to make. They do like to make. Yeah. So good, and we talked about this with experiential ed. Good teachers have always done making and experiential ed in their classrooms. They didn't brag about it. People don't know about it. But if you do, you walk teachers of the year. If you look at what they're doing, like the gardener guy, I don't know if you know about him from the Bronx that had his kids grow gardens like in a basement using hydroponics, and then went to, and these were high risk high school kids, and then went to farmers markets and sold their goods. That's maker education. So I think, mm-hmm. like you're saying, the claymation. Or, you know, I have some of my college students right now talking, they're doing social studies focus, having their kids pretend that they were one of the settlers going cross country and write a journal as if they were on that trip, the empathy. So I think good teachers are just know how to do this. And I like that it's getting a lot of press, maker education right now. I'm hoping it doesn't become flavor of the month like some of the other mm-hmm. trends, because making, if people do start associating it with just the 3D printer and the laser cutters, it's a lot of teachers, first of all, a lot of schools can't afford those. And second of all, a lot of teachers and librarians say, that's not what I'm about, and might just poo-poo it. And that would be a shame.
So the piece that we did talk about is like, you can do a lot, make a prototype with cardboard. And you brought up that someone even used the pumpkin cutters right. because they can't afford a lot.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that you can do.
Right.
It's just a matter of being a little resourceful, looking for ideas. And that's where our job is, sharing what people are doing so that can help teachers.
Well, I also think, and I say this to even my ed tech college graduate students, as well as my student teachers, you should be on social media for that. I mean, to follow hashtags like Maker Ed and STEM and STEAM, that's how I found the idea of using the, and they're so dirt cheap after Halloween, those little kid pumpkin cutters. They're selling them for a buck. I saw them in the supermarkets because they didn't sell out. So I think part of it is, we all don't have to be reinventing the wheel. That's what we have different now that we didn't have 20 years ago, is that mm-hmm. people are very happy. Educators love sharing the ideas that they come up with. And that's where, you know, I never heard of squishy circuits. And then I saw some links, and you either use Play-Doh, which is dirt cheap, or you make your own, and some LED lights and some batteries, and get all that down at the dollar store for just pennies, literally. But I wouldn't have heard of that. And then I built on those ideas. Oh, let me have my students design one for their classmate where they couldn't touch the items. So they are doing interview skills. And then I share that out. And maybe Maureen, who was in the webinar, then finds a better idea or adds on to that. And she puts it out. So it becomes this collective, cumulative sharing, and then everybody benefits. And teachers don't have to reinvent everything or figure it out on their own anymore.
Well, I know the benefit of social media. That's how I connected to a lot of the people that I know at a lot of the conferences. I go up and someone goes, oh, we're in person. I know you
yeah,
now.
You know, really
that kind
good.
Of thing. And the piece of it that you talked about is reflection, and how you're really encouraging kids to reflect all along the way, which
right.
I love. And what we have to do is get them to post. And you're doing that. You're having them blog, right?
Right. So I might do a Twitter hashtag this year, too. There's other ways for them to do it and have a YouTube channel. So there's other ways to do it. And you know what? I had kids, because I am in Title I, and we have kids. I have kids whose parents are from Mexico, so they're not that comfortable with social media. But when I send home a – they said no to the school, but I send home a permission, and every single kid's parents signed yes. Because they want to see the projects. So they sign yes. I said, it's going to be on our, I do Google Photos for them to send. So I take lots of pictures and they get to see, so they get to see their kids. And I say, I never use kids' names. And so that really helps. They don't even know what, because you saw the videos of my kids. You don't even know what schools, you know where I live, so you know what town. But there's 19 elementary schools in my town, so, and you don't even know what the names of the schools. And I like it that way. But there's lots of ways to get the kids to reflect. Like you were just saying, I like the blogs, and so did they, so I'll continue it. But then on their blog post, I might have them create a comic strip or an infographic or a YouTube video or a photo essay. Then they'll put those on their blogs. But then if I have some ways of them tweeting and they love YouTube, so if we start a YouTube channel, they'll eat that right up. So and that's going back to Universal Design for Thinking that you were that we just talked about too. That offering different ways for them to reflect on their experiences.
I love it. Now, I'm doing this podcast series for a reason, that so people get to know you and hear you, and we're going to write a blog post that goes along with this, and we're going to put all the links in. So what I'd like to, you know, you shared some of the maker projects. Is there any one that you didn't share that you'd like to share, or any ideas that we didn't talk about?
No, I do different themes, and you could put the links up. I have in my summer, and I use similar things. I do summer camps, the cardboard creations, and we were talking about that in the webinar where we spent a week, 3 hours a day, and there was so many cardboard projects the kids were able to do. There's circuits. We did circuit camp. We did, and this is probably one of my favorites, toy making and hacking. So the first part of the week, they make toys, and then the second week, I buy a box of those old handheld games. You could get them in lots from eBay, and they take apart those games. And so you should see their look of seeing the circuit boards and the screens and the keys. But then they have to invent a new game out of the parts, prototype. We talked about prototype. So it doesn't have to be working because they're just second, third, fourth, fifth graders. But they have to do a poster board that says the name of the game, who it's from, the rules. They design an app for it. So you get to see what it looks like. And so that's a fun one. So there's so many ways to bring Maker Ed activities into all environments.
Wow. Jackie, I just love that one when you take toys apart.
Oh, they love it too.
I want to do that myself. That sounds like fun. I used to do that with computers, take them apart and put them back together.
You could do. I can't afford even old ones. Maybe I'll go look at the school's storage site. The kids would love to take apart computers.
Well, I'm sorry we have to end now, but I just have to tell you, this has been wonderful. Just to kind of, because I know you, but I always learn something new. Well, I learned about some of the things that you're doing.
Oh,
so this has been wonderful.
Well, I really appreciate all that you share on your blog and your podcast. You're quite a busy woman, and everybody benefits from that.
Well, I don't know if I can say that I'm as busy and prolific as you are, because I am going to put a lot of links to a lot of your resources so people can see them. And but I want to thank you. Thank you so much for being here today, Jackie.
Well, thank you for doing it. I feel honored that you asked me to do this. So
thank you, Jackie. And thanks everyone for joining the Rethinking Learning podcast show today with Dr. Jackie Gerstein and learning about maker education. Thank you for joining our conversations on learning and the podcast series with Dr. Jackie Gerstein. If you'd like to learn more about Jackie and Maker Education, visit barbarabray.net, where we have a complimentary blog post, and it will be describing all of the Maker Education processes, resources, her unbelievable tips and activities that she puts on her own blog at User Generated Education. I hope you subscribe to the Rethinking Learning podcast series and become part of the conversations.